off his Late to the Party rewatch of the modern cult classic and Disney Channel original cartoon Gravity Falls, the only show where the creator makes an animated version of himself in each episode. And also is the award-winning cartoon show created by Alex Hirsch, starring a lovable cast of characters and their encounters with the wild, wacky, and weird supernatural creatures of Gravity Falls. So did anyone else notice the my fun fact?
Yeah, what? Is that real?
Yeah, I investigated slightly while I was sitting here.
But what about the episodes that Seuss isn't in?
Oh,
ouch, that's a little harsh.
So wait, does he actually have like an animated representation of himself just randomly in
No, it's not nearly as cool as that.
Okay.
Do you know in the end credits with the Polaroids?
Oh, I remember this now. Yeah, he's in one of the Polaroids.
He's in one of the Polaroids, like kind of back behind a couple other Polaroids where you just see like a corner of him.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
So he's a pterodactyl. Oh,
well,
in the...
Well, that's not fair.
He's actually the pterodactyl, yeah.
Nice.
If we're counting that...
Pterodactyl.
If we're counting that, then Matt Groening is in every episode of The Simpsons.
How? Because of the MG?
He's one of the people in the theater at the end.
Is he? Oh, interesting.
Yeah, the outline of his head.
Oh, interesting.
Well,
I might have just made that up.
Yeah, it's possible. I don't know.
Prove me wrong.
Listen,
you can't.
Yeah, I'm way more interested in like, you know, hearing a story than I am, like, you know, it could be real, whatever. It's a cool factoid regardless.
Agree to disagree. Let's continue.
Let's continue. So we are watching episodes 16 through 20, and we are wrapping up with season 1 this week. So we're going to do what we've been doing lately, in which we do our overall feelings. We talk about monster problem of the week, look a little bit into the B-plot, and then go over some of the secret trivia that we see at the end of each episode. So episode 16, Carpet Diem.
Oh, that's the one where they find the magic room.
I love this episode.
This was fun. This is a body swap episode. That's classic.
Multiple body swap episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like the episode really comes together at the end when finally everyone's switching bodies. So it's like then it's a party.
I feel like a lot of the humor in the episode revolves around Dipper and Mabel fighting over Stan's first approval and then disapproval. And you got to say the disapproval stuff is a whole lot more funny. Hey, look, I made you a rock sandwich.
I like when he like takes Dipper away and it's actually Mabel like, hey, I'm going to have the birds and the bees conversation with you.
Oh, God.
It's like, wow. This is awful because it's awkward even being a boy in that situation. It's profoundly awkward.
I like finding out that Dipper has a body odor issue. It doesn't wash his clothes. Doesn't feel very Dipper-like, but yeah, it feels very Dipper.
It's why he's always wearing the same thing.
It's Dipper-like.
Yeah. Oh, is he?
It's 13-year-old boy-like.
No, all right, don't be
that's
chasing
sexist.
Waterfalls. Yeah, don't be sexist is probably the better way of
phrasing
that. No, I'm going to say it. No, don't be chasing waterfalls. I don't know what that song means. But yeah, it was a fun episode. It's a neat little mechanic with the static shock carpet and more mysteriousness from the Mystery Shack. Somebody built that.
There's so much mystery in this room.
Yet again,
experiment was that?
Yeah. Yet again, another secret room in the Mystery Shack, like the one we found with all the wax figures in it. Like the Stan just kind of forgets about.
Oh yeah, I forgot I bought those. I stole those.
I did get the impression that Stan, like with the wax figures, he just painted over. He just wallpapered over the room.
Did Stan steal a TARDIS?
Yeah. Oh, because the shack seems to have, you know, way more rooms in it than
it should.
As a person who lives in an old house, I think you could say, yeah, there's a lot of times you're like, what does this floor even do? What does this level do? It's home for raccoons and disappointment is what it does.
The attic? Are you talking about the attic?
Sure, attics.
Okay. Yeah, they mostly stay in the attics.
So this is odd for me, as it's one of the monster problem of the week is them just not really even the body swapping as much as them just trying to deal with each other, living with one another. And this was the first time I think I noticed, man, Mabel's kind of being a jerk. Like, Dipper has some annoying tendencies from, like, living with another person, but Mabel just kind of has, like, a bunch of her friends over and, like, kind of makes a mess of everything. And
Mabel was the real monster.
And doesn't really seem sorry about it. And I'm like, man, that's weird. I mean, like, I'm starting to notice that she just does that. And I'm like, why? That's mean.
I don't know. I think this is fairly typical kid stuff, sibling stuff. I agree, she was not in the right. But I don't know if Dipper was either.
No.
They both seem to, like, unwilling to let each other go. Which is weird, because it resolves with them staying together.
On a basic level, I mean, there's nothing wrong with Mabel wanting to have her friends over for sleepovers.
Yeah.
But she's clearly not being respectful of Dipper's feelings.
And in fact, they're sharing a living space.
Which, I mean, to be also fair, Dipper isn't very forthcoming with his feelings.
No.
It's not like he just kind of blows up instead of sharing his feelings and concerns.
Yeah, because it takes the whole episode, everyone body swapping until finally he's like, oh, well, I just, you know, you're hanging out with your friends and I feel left out. And it's like, wow, buddy. I mean, like, and she's like, you could have just told me about it. I would have, like, oh, I don't want to leave you behind. Like, I mean, it's very sweet, actually.
Now, but did Dipper stop clicking its pen?
Maybe.
Because, like, deal breaker if he doesn't.
I really like that, that they establish he has some deeply annoying habits.
Ooh.
Yeah. I don't know, though. I don't know if they really amount to equal to her, Mabel's out-of-control slumber parties.
No, maybe not, but then like, again, it's also not feels like he, realer.
It's not like he jumps her and gives her a makeover in the middle of the night.
Do they do that?
No, they don't. He does that to her, technically.
No, they did at the beginning, didn't they?
No, that was only at the end. They randomly threatened to, but he was like, no, and they were kind of okay. Like, all right.
That's when
they
he was like, I'm leaving, and he slept with the wolves. And he's like, this is still better.
But the B plot's pretty good in this episode with Seuss switching. Yes, yeah, Seuss switching with models.
It's so strange.
I was going to say, as someone who, as a single person who shares roughly the same body type and social skills as Seuss, I was very disheartened by the fact that when he switched bodies with the pig was much more
charismatic.
I was going to say successful with the ladies.
Yeah. Well, he just didn't talk.
That's the lesson I think we should all learn. Don't say don't anything. Speak. Just stare.
Just stare, and then they'll follow you.
I can
into the
say
forest.
That doesn't work.
No, we are giving bad advice. I was like, don't just
take
stare.
My advice.
Just walk away. Walk away. Walk away walk and don't away. Engage. That's how you attract women. Walk away and don't engage.
I've been doing that my entire life.
I don't know. I think there's more of the staring than the walk away and don't engage. Have you ever just wandered into the woods and offered through silence to help someone find their car? Who was that woman? I really want to know her backstory.
She lost her car?
Didn't she lose her car?
No,
something happened.
She
needed
directions.
She needed directions. She didn't say to where.
And she decided that he had offered to show her. He was going to walk her there himself.
Even though she hadn't said where she wanted to go yet.
I have to say, the better part of all of that was Stan coming down and being like, look, and Seuss, you know, times are tough, and I'm going to have to cut your pay. And he just stares and makes angry piggy noises because Waddles doesn't really like Stan all that much. And he's like, all right, never mind. You keep going.
Gives him a raise.
I like that reaction, but I like Wendy's a lot more. Of just the, like, walking in and being like, all right,
I'm out.
What was he doing? He was eating the
shirt. The shirt, yeah.
Oh, I thought when was he eating the tissues?
He was eating tissues.
Stan didn't really care much. He was like, eh, whatever. But Wendy was just immediately like, I'm out. I don't know what's going on, but I want to be a part of it.
Once again, Wendy proves herself to be the level-headed one.
Yep.
Yeah.
And again, you know, Waddles usually proves to be the most entertaining character in the show.
And I loved the return of McGucket in this, as him just like, oh no, I'm actually a man in a pig's body. That's what they all say!
Hard return to McGucket in these episodes.
Yeah.
He's now a regular.
Yeah, he's in a lot.
I could almost want to say I could have done without, but eventually it pays off. It literally pays off. His giant robot making pays
everything
off.
Everything about him pays off.
My God.
Just being like I love how they actually do call him an old prospector dude at some point, which was like, oh yeah, thank you. Someone acknowledges that's what he is. Even though there's nothing to prospect here.
So there's one other thing I wanted to bring up about this episode that I definitely did not notice this the first time I watched it. But when they first discover that room, you see Stan go in and he just picks up a pair of glasses and like,
yeah,
I did notice it.
I noticed
sneakily,
that.
Like, he just pulls them aside and just keeps them to himself. And then later on in the episode, you see him sitting on his chair and he's just kind of like looking at him.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah. It's when, because normally in the couple scenes before, he was like, yeah, fight on the TV. Also, really funny. Where there's all like
the baby fights. Baby fights. All the TV shows on Gravity Falls are amazing. I'd watch any of them.
Yeah.
Ducktective is what the name of the show is.
Don't they end up like watching the season finale in one of the episodes?
Of Ducktective, they do at some point. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's next season.
We're not there yet.
Yeah, but it's but that's great. Of him just kind of like, you know, quietly sort of like looking over the and like pawning the glass, not pawning, just you know, going over the glasses. It's a good quiet scene.
Different shape from his, right?
Vaguely, I think. Okay. I don't remember.
All right, anyway, favorite moments?
mini golf with the glass eyes and never even mentioning that. Yeah. That's weird.
And ow, my head.
Yeah, that was fun.
Why am I out here?
Why am I even out here at night?
Just the, like, the whole thing with Seuss and the woman was great. And just the last thing, like, hey, can we, like, I'm playing catch up here. I've been a pig for the past couple of hours. Like,
that's what they all say.
Can we go back to kissing? I was into that.
Just the combination of, you know, my two favorite characters, you know, Waddles and Seuss, is what makes this episode for me.
And I was a big fan of Mabel's nightgown that had the save icon on it / floppy disk.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. She got some great clothes. I would buy really so many of her clothes.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on to our secret trivia. There are actually two in this episode. We're starting to get more. The first one is puberty is the greatest secret of all. Also, go outside and make friends. And which is true. Dipper should go outside and make friends, and then maybe you wouldn't be always mad at Mabel for having her friends over.
Or going through puberty.
Yeah, or that. So, and then also, but who stole the capers? All right, so episode 17 is Boys Crazy.
Oh, this is another one where I was kind of like, man, Mabel's kind of a jerk.
I love this. So this is going to be weird. I don't know if we know this, if the storyboarder came from Fairly Odd Parents, because there's something about the character design of the boy bands, which was infrequently, what was the name of that band?
Occasionally,
something ridiculous.
Seven something, it was like...
Yeah, but like there's something about the design of that boy band that makes me feel like it was straight
several
out of...
Several times.
Out of Fairly Odd Parents. There's just the way their eyes are. It was just something completely ridiculous. And I am here for all the digging into early or late 90s, early 2000s slang that does not make sense anymore.
Fun fact about this episode, I don't know if you guys looked it up, Lance Bass of NSYNC fame voiced all of the several times guys.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah,
it
makes a lot of sense. So, yeah,
God
really
bless
good.
That man.
I mean, everything about these guys, though, in this episode just makes it for me. Like, especially like, when she hands them the glass of water and they can't drink from it. They're like, what do we do with this?
Mm.
And, like, it's, like, one of, like, the super gifts, I think, that was going around for a while with, like, all of them just trying the different ways to drink it.
I don't know. I kind of love everything about it. Like, I love everything about, like, the boy band stuff. I just think it's hysterical. Everything about them is just genuinely funny. And it's not, like, a directly associated with Gravity Falls in any way. Oddly enough, this is one of the episodes that's not like a weird thing associated just with Gravity Falls. It's like something that just kind of comes into
the
town.
The band doesn't even like it didn't originate. Like the band leader wasn't from Gravity Falls that I can recall.
No,
they were just on tour.
So it's just a world that's very weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was a lot of fun things, but I don't know what the monster problem of the week
Mabel.
Was.
Mabel.
What about Mabel?
Again.
She was gonna keep them. She was having a villain turn.
It wasn't
a heel
the
turn.
Scientist who was, you know, cloning them all. Nah,
no,
he got arrested.
And easily dispatched.
Yeah. He got arrested for not having his license plate. But the goat ate it.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. I mean, what was the B plot then?
Oh, the B plot was the Robbie and Dipper stuff.
Oh, the mind control stuff with the music? Yeah.
I almost feel like that was the A plot and the B plot was the boy band. Because the boy band was, like, again, the villain was immediately dispatched because of a driving violation. And then, you know, Mabel just learns how to be nice and that's it. But I think, you know, Dipper being kind of a creep, although a well-meaning creep, was pretty important. Like, he is way obsessed with Wendy. I don't know if he's wrong in this.
Well,
he's not to a fault.
I was going to say, like, isn't... You know, your villain becomes, like, the power corrupting, because, like, how does he do the hypnotic song again? Isn't it like from the book?
Or was it? No. Robbie? No, yeah. Robbie apparently just rips off another artist's
Robbie's
music
just
that
a
happens, happens to have a subliminal message in there, if you believe him. And I think that that tracks pretty well.
Yeah.
I love the entire sequence of how they try to play a CD on a Victrola.
Yeah.
And they're like, I'm doing something wrong and I can't figure out what. But I don't, I just think that. I don't know. Dipper isn't wrong. He was kind of right. Robbie is a scumbag. He was just a scumbag in a way that he didn't think.
Dipper's doing the right thing for the wrong reasons.
That's it.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's definitely true.
Because immediately when it's over, it's like, hey, we were thinking, you want to go bowling? She's like, really? Right now? Really?
That's,
like, if you hadn't said anything, I would have just walked away. We would have hung out tomorrow or whatever. But, like, well, really? What the heck? You know?
See, to me, that was kind of weird. That because it's not like Dipper was really coming on to her on that one. That was
But she knows better.
Yeah, I guess so.
I think we like the conceit is that we know, just like you said, Pete.
Yeah,
we know his main motivation for trying to undo Robbie was because he likes Wendy.
Yeah,
so he's doing it for the wrong reason, and that wasn't just an innocent, hey, I'll take you out because I know this is very stressful. This was him trying to make his move, shoot his shot, as the kids today say.
And he shot it right in his foot.
Right.
I guess I just don't give. I just don't give Wendy enough credit for being clever enough to realize that.
Shots fired against Wendy. I don't get enough for that.
Yeah, I mean, I think in this, I think she can tell to a certain extent, and especially in this episode, it seems to come off like she's very, because again, she's like, really, right now?
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those moments where, like, I think I can get, like, why she would be upset in that moment. It's like, come on, man.
I mean, it's definitely narrative foo where, like, she doesn't realize this 13-year-old, 12-year-old?
12.
Is hitting on her or crushing on her. For most of the series, but that one moment she does realize it. But it's splitting hairs for me. I get it. I get what's happening here.
Yeah.
We're seeing Dipper learning how to be a real friend and not a jerk.
Yeah, and we do see him mature in the episode because he does seem sort of like, man,
he owns it. Yeah,
yeah, and I do like that him and Stan get a lot of good bonding moments in this episode too.
Yeah, I agree.
Like it's because they rarely get them oddly enough in the series. And it was a good amount of stuff. And
it's probably because Stan doesn't like him.
Yeah, Stan hates Dipper.
I can't
so much.
I can't wait till we get to our favorite parts, because my favorite part is about the arguable A plot, B plot, the boy bands. The dialogue is amazing.
It is.
And specifically, I actually had to write it down. There's so many good lines.
Oh, I have so many great quotes from all of these episodes we're talking about today.
But my favorite was, yo, dog, who is this big, round, bright fool? Talking about the sun. And then tries to stare down the sun. I'm like, that's just brilliant. I love it.
I'm going to challenge you to a staring contest.
Oh.
such a good thing.
And then the one guy makes out with the tree. He's like, I don't know what
it is. I want to kiss a tree.
Yeah, babe.
Yep.
Oh, God. Like, it's... And I do like that we get some dynamic with Mabel and, you know, her friends. Like, there's a little bit more characterization than what we had in the... Like, I just think they're fun. They're good. Candy's, like, kind of hyper in her own way. Like, a very calm hyper, which is very strange, especially what happened last episode, where she's immediately like, oh, I want to switch bodies! That sounds fun! Mm.
They were the voice of reason in this episode.
Yeah.
However, I'm very upset that Brenda's lizard has not shown up in more episodes that much.
You're right.
Yeah.
You start a letter writing campaign?
Yeah, I should. More lizard, less Brenda. I did enjoy their, oh no, they're aggressively dancing at us here.
Again, just because I feel like Mabel kind of takes a very dark turn in this episode. How do we feel about that?
I just realized the twins are both dealing with obsession.
Uh-huh.
Romantic obsession.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
The desire to own the narrative here.
Puberty's terrible.
Yeah, wow, that really
is
the monster.
Like, every guy that she's been involved with has left this summer. Like, let me keep them. Let me just have them.
I'll dig that this is probably one of the earliest nods to continuity. There's always continuity. I mean, the S hasn't come back on Mystery Shack. I get it. But so far, like, I'm not quite sure why this show is, like, the mystery show everybody has been pitching it as. So at least this gives us a little continuity where, Mabel is aware that she has a bad history with men this summer.
But now she has more men than she ever lost in the summer.
Indeed.
Actual That's great. Men, so she can, if she loses one, she still has four left.
And so she, like, loses all five.
So how do we feel about them, like, being let go? Like, because I love how Kenny's like, they're not going to last a week. I'm like, do you think
why didn't they take them to, like, town? So at least she taught them how to drink water.
They wanted to experience the outdoors.
They want to live in the wilderness and dance a deer, I guess.
I mean, are clones adults or are they children, depending on how old they've... It's impossible to say.
Yeah, we don't know. Well, like, we just know that one, they didn't know what the sun was.
I can't remember if they pop back up. I feel like they don't.
I hope they do, though. In this rewatch, I want them to come back and just kind of, like, at least still be...
I just
want to
see their bones in the forest.
Oh, no!
How many other people kept hearing the Party Posse music from The Simpsons every time vaguely. They'd show up?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there was a whole
actually not
period of rallying against boy bands at this time.
Actually, not so much hearing it during that, but now thinking back on it, every time I'm trying to listen to conjure up the music they sang, I'm just hearing that bam 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 bam.
It's all the same.
Bam bam. Actually, that was NSYNC. That was the music that NSYNC played when they showed up in the Party Posse episode.
I have a favorite quote of sorts, which we see in a few more episodes as well, Stan saying similar things all the time, which is, bury gold. You've been buying gold, right?
Yeah.
Which
bury your gold.
Your gold. What do you mean you don't have any gold?
Yeah, I love that buying gold is a thing that gets referenced a lot on the show.
Yep.
All right, if we don't have any other favorite moments, I'll move on to secret trivia. And we only actually have one now, which is Happy Now, Ariel.
Is that a reference to something?
I don't know. This is what I couldn't figure it out. I didn't have enough time.
Ariel, somebody... Was that one of the characters in the... was that one of the dancers?
I don't know.
It's not any of the names of the...
Someone called James.
Yeah.
No, I'm looking it up.
No, we don't
internet.
Need James.
Oh,
I am James.
Ariel,
call me.
Hirsch?
It could be.
Oh!
All right. She is... she's one of Pacifica's friends. I'm guessing she is his sister. His twin sister? What the fuck?
Wait, you didn't know that Alex Hirsch had a twin sister?
No!
This whole series is based off him and his twin sister's, childhood.
Wait a minute. How much is it based off of
they went, they had, their so. Grandfather was very much similar to Stan in ways, and they spent the summers
and
with
they
him.
They did get attacked by several creatures.
And she almost married a bunch of gnomes.
Oh, nice.
All right, then.
So I guess it's a nod to his sister.
Yeah. So maybe she was whining that she wasn't in any of the credits.
So, the cryptogram at the end of Boy Crazy mentions her Happy Now Ariel. In response to this, Ariel made a post on Tumblr stating that she was.
Oh, good. I'm glad she's happy. All right. Episode 18, Land Before Swine.
Love this episode.
This is a good episode.
Much.
This was amazing.
I just love that the title is a double pun.
Yeah, this is the first time while watching I wanted to immediately post onto social media some of the lines from the show. And I actually think they're genuinely amazing, but I'll wait until our favorite moments to share.
So the whole plot of this is revolving around Mabel needs to get, what is it called? The, jumper to hold Waddles
in? It's a pechuse.
Yeah. What? A what? I don't know what that word is either.
I think it's a swaddling thing for babies.
Yeah.
But it works for pigs.
It works for pigs.
It's very much an infomercial on TV, but she just goes down to town and buys it.
Yeah.
But she tells
probably
Stan,
at the As Seen on TV store.
I guess it must have one of those in Gravity Falls.
I would assume.
But she's fighting with Stan in the beginning. Don't put Waddles outside. He could get eaten. And then he puts Waddles outside. And guess what happens?
He gets taken by a pterodactyl. Yep.
What are the
odds? As happens.
So, and then we see our B plot, which is Seuss and Dipper being all like, let's get pictures of the monster, and Seuss messing everything up all the time. Silly Seuss.
Oh, Seuss.
I'm glad we addressed this a little bit, because,
he's just accident prone.
He is. And, I like that he's listen, I'm very clumsy, and I know it's not as charming as I think it is all the time. But, I like that we own it at this point in the show. That, somebody brings it up and finally says, man, come on. This is just not helpful. And it does get to some semblance of resolution. He owns it. He says, yeah, you're right. I can't improve, but I gotta at least be acknowledging the fact that I mess up. And you have every right to be pissed at me.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
I love the animation style. The animation style of this entire, this episode, the next few episodes,
ratchet up. I'm used to a lot of adult cartoons, meaning like cartoons that go on prime time. They're kind of like this flash animation based kind of thing. I don't know the words for it, but like it feels like you've got a character map, a mold that they just sort of move around the screen, which is fine. You could tell fun stories with that, but this is old school 2D animation and beautiful. Like the sweeping vistas, the dinosaurs trapped in amber, the whole thing, it looked amazing.
The amber's actually pretty funny, leads to a lot of good moments, I think, where they're like, especially like with the high fives and then like, you know, Stan getting his hand stuck on Mabel's face. And the return of McGucket, who comes back, you know, as a more prominent character in this episode.
And sadly dies.
But not really.
No, he doesn't. he's like immortal somehow.
For whatever reason.
Mind if I come with you and tell, what was it?
Come with you and tell you some more.
Inappropriately personal stories?
No, don't come.
And then he's there anyway.
Come in anyway. And you know what? Maybe the rope wouldn't have broken if there weren't so many people.
Yeah.
Nah, damn it, McGuckin.
He ate his way out of a pterodactyl?
He did. Yes.
Yeah. So he killed that baby pterodactyl?
From what we understand, yes.
Yes.
Oh, that's a shame. But oh well.
I just ate a dude.
He got his lucky magic spoons back.
Yep. But I also think this is a... So I guess our monster problem of the week is essentially just Stan being selfish or, like, being uncaring of Mabel's pet, I guess. Or, like, not being concerned with Waddles.
Yeah, I feel like the monster problem of the week is just disagreements between the characters. Because we see the same type of disagreement between Mabel and Stan, and then we see a similar one between Zeus and Dipper, in which they don't want to tell the truth. In which Dipper doesn't want to tell Zeus the truth about how he feels, and then Stan doesn't want to tell the truth that he put Waddles outside, but then he starts feeling guilty. Yeah. And then Dipper starts feeling guilty, and then the truth comes out, and then everyone's fine.
Mm. Well, no, it's not, actually. When the truth comes out, everyone's at each other's throats.
But they fix it.
But they fix it, but it takes work and effort beyond that.
Maybe
like, the honesty doesn't fix
everything. They never
should
have lied in the first place.
So, yeah, if they had told the truth in the beginning, things wouldn't have gotten so out of hand.
Yeah.
But I do feel that the pterodactyl is a pretty big problem, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm shocked that none of the other dinosaurs melted out of the sap. So we did see that little wiggle.
Of the T-Rex.
The T-Rex was getting out a little bit.
So do we have any favorite moments out of this one?
Frank does.
I do. The phrase that I believe with all my heart now, rose before dinos. Love it. Love it. It's perfect and fits into so many different scenarios.
I'm really a big fan of Stan punching the pterodactyl in the face.
A lot.
Right, yeah.
To direct it.
He made true to his lies.
Yeah, like they're all looking up at him like, oh. Like, he just punched it in the face.
Yeah, that's like top five favorite moment in the series for me. That's just...
Oh, it's so good.
I love all the commercials.
I mean, this
is another great
one.
Yeah. Very Rick and Morty, not only just because of the voiceover, but the absurdity. It works for pigs! I know what you're thinking. It works for pigs. Why? I guess that was necessary.
My favorite infomercial was, are your arms jealousy your legs? Get arm pants. They're pants for your arms. So it goes in well with the TV, you know?
Yeah.
The TV shows, the commercials, they're all great. God. I would watch all of this stuff, but it's like very much, you know, points towards the whole like Billy Mays type of commercial.
Like,
R.I.P.
We were talking about how badly we would want to watch Ducktective.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. Classic. You have your characters fight a dinosaur. How does that go wrong? How could it go wrong?
Literally. Like they literally fought the dinosaur at one point, too.
I cite every movie with the word Jurassic in the title, literally, as an example of what could go wrong if your main character fights a dinosaur.
Oh, yeah.
What was
Stan's
idea? Name for
it was
the
like
show?
Sap Park. Or like
Jurassic
Sap Land or Sap World.
For them, it was horrible. Yeah, don't forget how you defeat what is that bird dinosaur called again?
Pterodactyl.
Is you have to stay between its eyes.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Good old Seuss.
He just knows things. Every once in a while, his wisdom is great.
All right. So we have two secret trivias from this, or the cryptograms from this. The first one is throughout the episode, there's a markings that it just spells out lies in somewhere in the show. And then the one at the end of the episode is, but it works for pigs.
It does.
And it did.
And it did.
Yeah.
It worked really well. So Waddles is a very well-behaved pig.
And Waddles is just, I would go fight a pterodactyl.
Oh, Waddles. Also Waddles is much smaller than he should be.
Really?
Oh, yes. Pigs are not that small.
Maybe he's a pygmy.
Or a potbelly pig? Or like a...
Well, we're out of time.
Anyway,
we are out of time. We have no more time to record. Pygmy joke was the end of podcasting.
You just go to hell. That was funny.
No, it was not. We just polled our audience, and they said no.
All right, so episode 19 is the first part of, like, I guess the two-part finale of season one.
Yeah.
Called Dreamscapers, right?
Dreamscapers, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was Dreamscapers.
It's possible.
Someone fact-checked me.
This is the introduction of a legendary character.
Yes, it is.
All right. So, I've never seen the show before, but I recognize the character. Bill?
Bill.
Yeah.
Bill Cipher.
Bill Cipher. All right. I was excited as soon as I saw that he was going to be in it. I was like, oh, all right. Finally, I get some of the Crack Knuckles plot that I've been looking for.
It's that triangle thing.
It definitely is when one of the shoes drop, is him just kind of showing up. And I think when he steals the deer teeth, you kind of like get a little bit of a moment of like,
yeah, that was creepy enough for me to be like,
good at all.
That does not look appealing. Yeah, but I really, cool.
See, I kind of figured that he wasn't very good when he got summoned by Little Gideon.
But he was in the book.
Yeah, but when you get I have never encountered in fiction something good that is summoned through a ritual.
I thought you... Oh, I misheard. I thought you were saying he wasn't, like, a serious threat because he was summoned by Gideon.
Oh, no. Okay, I'm talking about... This is not a good... I knew he wasn't a good thing because he got summoned through a ritual.
Oh, yeah. He, like, spoke in tongues to get him to come out.
That was so weird.
Yeah. And his, like, eyes went and... Ooh.
Like, he just eventually just decides it's too much. You've got to pull out all the stops to try and get the deed.
All it needed was a blood ritual, and it would have been marked all the T's.
But, like, he shows up with a lot of pomp and circumstance, and Seuss and Mabel are kind of like, ooh, okay, somebody raised their game. And it's also at the same time when Dipper's kind of having some doubts about Stan and, how much Stan really cares or respects him.
Oh, poor Dipper. Sad Dipper.
Yeah, because Dipper's been getting the shaft a little bit recently. That makes sense.
Observant Dipper.
Yeah. And then they go inside of Stan's head for this episode to go chase after Bill, who's, like, going and searching through his mind to go and find... the codes to the safe to get the deed for the mystery shack.
And guess who's there?
Who's there?
Xylar and Crass.
Names. Xylar.
Ooh, Xylar.
Xylar, it's such a great... If I had to make up a name for a VHS heartthrob, Xylar could it? No one could do better than Xylar.
Yeah.
Nope.
I think my...
Arm thrown!
Right after those, my favorite appearance
of... You want to arm throw him, bro?
And then you get arm kitty cannons.
Yes! That, like, I can make my hands into kittens? Yes.
And shoot them at people?
So what are the most ominous things that Bill does in this? I definitely think deer teeth is high up
there. Oh, that's terrifying.
It's just something about it was just horrific.
So weird.
I think the way the animation works on Bill's face as he's talking about it, there's like a weird, it's not all just animated. Some of it's like footage that's rendered in a weird way. And his voice gets very strange in at least two different parts in it. There's something about this villain that even if I didn't know, I don't know what's happening, but I know that he appears more than once and is like a reoccurring thing, a theme in the show. And something about the way he does his intro in this makes me like, damn, this is memorable. Where the gremlin goblin thing, I'm like, yeah, that's just a joke.
Gremlin?
Or even the gnomes where I know they come back. I'm like, it doesn't really matter. They're just gnomes.
Yeah.
Even Gideon. Gideon is a jerk and disgusting, but he's like on the human level of, I get his motivation. They're petty and stupid, but I get it. Bill is just weird. And I like that.
Yeah. And he's very intimidating And whenever he has a mood change, it's very stark, and it's again, very threatening. And him, like, pretending to be Seuss for a small amount of time, that, I don't know, that hits pretty hard when, like, that suddenly changes and Seuss shows up, and, like, it takes a beat for everyone to be like, wait, what? Because he just keeps talking, like, oh, hey! But it's still, like, it's also cool, like, going through Stan's mind and, like, A, seeing clips of older episodes, and B, just kind of, like, just checking stuff out. Like, again, all the stuff about his past and even...
And C, feeding himself food into his belly in the bathroom.
Yeah, that was funny.
Hey, Tommy.
I don't see what's funny about that.
It was endearing. Scary. And also, like, if you found your great uncle doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty,
it was horrifying for them as children.
But again, going back to Dipper, has that moment where he thinks, like, oh, Stan doesn't care about me or wants to get rid of me. And then, like, he's immediately kind of like, oh, I don't care. Like, I'll let the shack go. Let Gideon win. I don't care anymore. Because, you know, Stan doesn't care about me. Which we then learn, of course, that's not the case at all. Like, Stan talks about his past and how he's like, you know, oh, man, when I was younger, I was like Dipper. Everything was like, you know, people were making fun of me and thought I wouldn't amount to anything. But, you know, my father was always kind of a little tough on me to just try and, like, get me to, you know, push that much harder. To, like, you know, left hook! And, like, that was great. I don't know why. I love left hook. That got me laughing every time.
I found this very touching, even though, like, on the surface of I'm trying to toughen you up, kid, doesn't feel like something I would normally find touching in most situations. I think that's why you have to have an episode within a character's memories.
Yeah.
Because I get to see where he came from. Mm-hmm. Any other situation where, like, an older family member tries to toughen up a kid, that could read as being still jerk, right? Very jerky.
Oh, yeah.
But in this case, it did not. It read as touching for me, and I think it's a clever way to get over that hump is by showing everything from his viewpoints and his memories, Stan's memories.
Because you get to realize that he sees so much of himself in Dipper, and then he does give Dipper the winning advice of, like, you're the dream space, man. You can just do whatever you want. I can make a soda. See, there it is. Hooray. And then they all go fight Bill. And then Bill also does some cool stuff in that final fight, too. If we can go over to some favorite moments. Like, the English Bulldog is hysterical and evil and scary at the same time.
Anybody else got one?
Xylear and Crass are my favorite moments of things that you could just
arm thrown.
Make happen. Yeah. Arm yeah. thrown.
It was beautiful.
Dual kitty cannon, like I said before. How do you beat that?
Apparently you don't.
Nope.
So yeah, it feels sort of like Decipher Bill Siler.
Oh, also, we were missing the point where he calls everyone like, hey, question mark, Pine Tree, and Shooting Star. Like
that's... Yeah, I love that he called them by the symbols that I had used to promote this podcast. Not quite aware, but James had suggested them, and Michelle was like, yeah, those are the ones. Did you know that we were calling out the four symbols that Bill mentions in this episode?
No, I didn't. I just knew that those were four main symbols of the main character.
There's a lot of symbols. There's a lot of symbols that in this show that matter a lot, and like even when he's like disappearing and he has that ritual circle around him, like you see some of the symbols that we're seeing. Yeah. So they're all going to come back.
Including a pair of glasses, which is throwback.
Yeah. So everything's going to, like, hopefully come back at some point or another to tie into that.
Shut up, everyone's going to come back.
But pretty much, you know, you leave our uncle's brain alone, you isosceles monster. So, because I'm pretty sure that's her response at some point. It might have been after he pointed out the...
Is he isosceles?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, because he's not even, and
he's not
equilateral.
Well, even if he was equilateral, he would still be isosceles.
Yep.
But if you're isosceles, that doesn't mean you're equilateral.
Dang!
Oh, geometry.
I guess.
So, what a non-threatening shape of
actually,
a villain, though.
Actually, I don't
just
think that's
triangle?
Correct.
Oh, wait, yep, I'm wrong. I'm dumb. Never mind.
Isosceles triangles have exactly two sides each.
A rectangle isn't a square, but a square is a rectangle. It doesn't work the same way with triangles because they only have three sides. Never mind. Scratch it off.
Well,
if we are done with favorite moments, I will move on to the Cypher trivia. There are four in this episode throughout the episode. We have different things that show up that are in different codes. There's one that says, curse you, Marilyn. I don't know who Marilyn is.
The state.
The state, yeah.
No, it's not spelled like that.
Oh, okay.
That's,
she definitely never said a D.
M-A-R-I-L-Y-N. Hmm. Pete is correct in this time.
In this timeline.
In this timeline. There's another one that says, to be continued. There's another one that says, liar, monster, snappy dresser. And then lastly, during the end of the episode, is next week, Xylar and Crass's Boat Excellent Radventure.
I would watch that.
I would watch that, too.
I do like that they're like, will I ever, like when Mabel's like, will I ever see you again? In your dreams, baby.
Oh, swoon.
Good line, man. Good line. Well, I guess we got to move on to the
novel. Yeah, all right. So episode 20, a.k.a. the season finale of episode one.
Or season one.
Of season one, Gideon Rises.
Our penultimate episode of the season, yeah, where everything just sort of comes to a head.
Thank you for thinking of the word I was thinking of.
No, no worries. That's what I'm here for. But it's interesting because it just sort of like it picks up right where the last episode left off, where Gideon just decides, F it, I'm going to go ahead and steal the deed out of the safe by whatever means necessary.
Dynamite was his means.
Essentially. And you know, he tried trickery, it didn't work, and this is the way he went. And they're in the worst spot they've been in all season, where everybody's just kind of living with Seuss and his grandma, who's adorable.
His grandma is a national treasure, and I've never met anyone who's vacuums walls so much.
And drapes.
Yep.
And herself.
And I also...
Let me vacuum my face!
Yep. I like how Mabel brings back the grappling hook for, like, the first time since, like, episode one. And tries to make it as useful as possible.
I feel like that's the true sign that, like, nothing happens by accident in this show, that, like, everything kind of ties up.
Yeah.
Or, you know, at least they're going to reuse everything that they've used once.
Just like the gnomes come back.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like that this is everyone's kind of lowest point. Like, this is, like, things look pretty hopeless for them. Gideon seems to have absolutely won. He's got, like, the shack and, you know, he's gotten the whole town against them because, hey, you know, local, like, kind of cheat and huckster standpines that no one likes.
And he has a Gundam now.
And he has a Gundam now, yeah.
Well, he doesn't yet. Not at this episode. They're building it.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the end of the episode, he gets it, yeah.
But yeah, it's... There's a lot of fun things in this episode, and this is where I think, really, the animation takes off. It's amazing.
I agree.
The finale is just, like, a bunch of really cool action pieces that are good. This is full into the end? This wraps up with the mech coming alive.
In season one, yeah.
And fighting itself while they're inside of its head.
Which episode are we on again?
20.
20, yeah, that's what I thought. Okay.
Okay. So, yeah, it's cool that there's all the stuff that happens, but I'm finally excited that this is a late to the party. Like, I'm getting the, like, oh, I could see how this all, how there is a narrative arc. Because, all right, so the hidden in silhouette during most of this episode until he's revealed is McGuckin, who's working on the giant robot that is Gideon. And we've established one really fundamental thing about McGuckin when he first was introduced is he builds giant robots to prove a point.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that is so unnecessary, but also so efficient. Because they could have just had, like, some masked henchman, somebody working for Gideon, building a robot.
Yeah.
You know, nobody would have... I would have batted an eye. But to make it a reoccurring gag character...
Who's already established as building giant robots.
It really is. It's little moments like that throughout this that I'm like, oh, wow, this is good. All right, this is definitely a labor of love for the people who worked on it.
I was super upset because that's not how deeds work.
Yeah, I said that out loud several times.
Yeah, no.
It's like, just because you hold that piece of paper doesn't mean you own the property.
There are names
and signatures on that piece of paper.
And I looked at it, that signature still said Stan. It wasn't like he even... I was like, oh, maybe they're going to, you know, hand wave it away by saying that he forged Stan's signature. Nope.
Yeah.
Just has the deed. And they tried to get him arrested... in Dipper's defense,
they do. They say, like, he stole the deed. Like, but I thought you gave it to me.
The cops are the unsung heroes of the series. I love those two cops.
I know, right?
They just keep getting better. Yeah. I love them.
You and I have very different definitions of hero.
but like, no, literally, like, so much. If they were competent, half the things in this show wouldn't happen, and like, it wouldn't be as fun.
Hero as in driving force, because otherwise you have to argue, well, what does you holding the deed mean? Nothing. Oh, what, the cops are insane? That's why it works.
Or we could take a joyride in our brand new convertible.
Every moment I spend with you is a treasure.
I love them. They're adorable together.
They're so good to each other. I love it.
They remind me of the two southern cops in The Critic, the episode where he's a truck driver.
I remember that.
I vaguely remember it.
Like, tell me something. You're heading to New York City? Or you're from New York City?
Oh, yeah. There was a bunch of like them being very impressed with New York.
Tell me something. They still got all them nice galleries down Soho Way.
Erudite cops. Yeah.
Man,
yeah.
Man, that's crazy that I actually remember that episode. But
I appreciate that they had the Whittle handcuffs for Whittle Gideon. You know, the ones they literally had to do with their two fingers.
I like that Gideon had like the motion sensors all around him and stuff. I thought that was like when he got
in
the
mocap. That was clever. Yeah. The mocap way of controlling the robot. Yeah.
Like, oh hey, it's Pacific Rim.
Was it years before?
No, I don't think it was that long before.
I think it was between the two.
Yeah. Oh, also, like we don't have much of a B plot technically, but we have a lot of just Stan moments which act as a B plot. Mm-hmm. It's mostly the twins kind of dealing with stuff and trying to get Gideon, but Stan winds up kind of like turning everyone against him at the end because it was Stan who comes at the end and kind of gets everyone against Gideon because he's working on his B-plot stuff, which all has to do with his hearing aid and just him having all those really personal moments of just like, oh, I failed. I'm out of the shack.
Stan's depression.
Yep. But it works. It works because like, I think it works as a pretty decent kind of side plot to everything else is just him dealing with, just trying to come to terms with losing, but like, oh no, I can do this.
They're certainly building a lot of support for a character that they're also building a lot of mistrust for.
Yep.
So yeah, the big plot of this is that Gideon has been looking for book number one because he has book number two, and it's safe to assume that there was just a book number one out there that will help him open a portal to whatever ultimate power. Yeah, whatever. And the whole time, which I did not expect to do in this cartoon, I was watching as Gideon was getting Dipper's book, and like it falls out of Dipper's pocket and lands like cover down, and I'm like, oh, he doesn't see that it's actually book number three. He doesn't see that it's book number three. And a weird little aside, I've 100% had this happen to me in collecting, where like I go out to get, like, I have volume two of, I think it was a volume two of like The Wizard of Oz that collected all the Frank Baum stories. And I find it was a leather bound volume two. And I'm like, I'm going to get volume one because I need this. I want to get the full set. So I find it and I get it on eBay and I snipe it. I finally get low. And then I find out, oh, it's one of three. I'm like, you son of a, how? And this is even worse because he gets the book and he takes it home and it turns out to be three. Interesting. So the whole plot that these books mean something,
Frank, I have comes to say, I sympathize with you so much because that's happened to me so many times with buying old VHSs at Goodwill.
Oh, yeah. That's
think you
tragic.
Buy Pokemon the movie, you open it up, and it's just Pokemon episodes.
Oh, what is the point even? God.
Or worse, it's someone's home movie. Yeah. Or
No, those are great. Home movies are great. I will always say
original commercials.
You open it up and you realize it's a VHS. I can't play this.
No, but yeah, yeah.
It's actually a Betamax.
And this builds up, of course, to Uncle Stan getting all three books, which I knew was coming. At that point, I was screaming at my screen like I was watching The Usual Suspects, and this was Kaiser Soze's reveal, and I just figured it out. I'm like, he's gonna go to the secret room, and he's got all three. I tell my wife, and she's like, yeah, hon, I know.
Yeah,
because he does subtly.
What the hell else was behind that vending machine?
Yeah,
nothing.
Because he tried to even say something in one of the episodes. He's like, oh yeah, or when they were in his brain. And there was like a secret like door or whatever, and they went and opened it, and it was like, oh, nobody knows about my secret behind my vending machine. Oh, that's boring. Close. We don't want that.
Yeah. That really frustrated me in the other episode. I thank God it was only one episode of suspense before they get.
If only they knew that in here I have behind that vending machine I have.
Like, yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, a lot of fun things. And finally, there is an arc at the end of season one. I see that there is an arc.
Yep.
I see the horizon, as it were.
It's just a cool ending, though, where he like sets all the books up together. And, it's the most determined we've ever seen Stan, really. Like, when it's not, especially when it's not concerning money, he's just like, finally, we have them all. And it's just, what the heck are you doing, my dude?
I feel like, you know, like it's a good triple ending almost, like where you get like the beating of the monster and him and Gideon getting arrested, and then, you know, the evil Stan pulling the books away. Did anybody else notice that, like, there was pretty much a Stan in drag in the background when Gideon was getting arrested?
No?
No.
Yeah, yeah, it's, like, straight up, like, exact same face with long hair and, like a...
Is this just, like, an animation thing that they had in there?
Yeah, I mean, it might have been lazy animation and, like, they had the character design already, but,
this
like...
level. Yeah. Interesting. Let's see if we could screen grab that later on. And
I don't know. The people that have watched this before don't seem to think it's that important. So.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that. Thanks for pointing that out. But
well, hey. That's what I'm here for.
Well,
ruin the mystery.
I wasn't really trying for something important. I just thought it was hysterical that there was an elderly female Stan.
Huh.
How do you know she's elderly?
Oh, man, we've forgotten the last episode about like Stan's date with Lacey Susan.
Oh, oh! What was it? Something excuse?
Non-specific excuse.
Crash.
Why did he have to knock things over? I don't know if that helped.
That was
think.
The excuse.
Oh. Yeah. Oh my god. Like Mabel just watching that, being like, "Ooh, spicy. Oh, never mind. Not so spicy."
So I don't know, Pete. Since you're probably the only one here who hasn't already watched this, do you suspect ill intent from Stan?
Well, yeah, I said that last week. I'm very worried that Grunkle Stan is going to be evil. My fears were not assuaged.
Yeah, definitely. If anything, it sets it up more. But yeah. I actually don't. I feel like we're definitely being led down to the path of I don't trust him. But there's too much niceness in Stan for it to be as straightforward as he's bad.
Yeah, because especially what happened...
Well, you've seen this, so shut up. That's why I'm talking to Pete. On this episode of Near Mint. No, I'm sorry. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's best that we just conjecture.
I mean, I can see him being bad, but not thoroughly evil.
Sure. Yeah, you know, that's possible.
It's like, okay, the bad guy that... this little kid is cute. He reminds me of me. I want to help him a little bit.
That's true.
Not enough to foil my plans, but...
I guess we'll have to watch to find out.
I don't think so. I'll just ask the people that know. Guys, what happens? No, don't! That was a lie.
I can definitely say from when I remember watching it when I was in your guys' shoes and not having I definitely remember having watched this that scene and like not knowing what was to come. I was definitely where you guys were, where I was thinking like he's not going to be the big mwahaha villain of the series, but I think he's up to something bad or nefarious that the kids are going to either have to like, you know, talk him out of or hug it out or something. That's going to be like, no, Grunkle Stan, like. This is, well, like, the community is important or anything, or just don't do this. But it's, I don't know, like, we'll definitely, see, you guys will figure it out eventually.
Yeah, I love how Grappling Hook came back in, and Sneaky Basement.
Yeah, and gnomes. The gnomes was great. Also, what was going on with the squirrels?
No, you don't want to know. This is a kid's cartoon.
It's like, what did
he was
say?
Taking a bath.
He said, he told the one... What was he named?
No, Shmebulok.
No, not Shmebulok. One of the swirls. He's like, you can take a break. Not, the rest of you, though, get back to it. Shmebulok.
Is that all you could say? Shmebulok.
That second Shmebulok was actually no. But we'll never know.
Yeah.
All right. We went through all our favorite moments, right?
I think so, definitely.
All right. We got a lot of... Cypher trivia again.
Yeah, hit me with ciphers.
We have one that says, Bill is watching.
No, he's not.
We have another one that says, reverse the ciphers.
Oh.
Watching is Bill?
Watching is Bill. So, the next one is, don't eat him. So, him eat don't.
Or do eat her.
Him don't.
I'll say.
Oh. And then our last one is a mouthful. So, the portal, when completed, will open a new gateway to infinite new worlds and herald a new era in mankind's understanding of the universe. Plus, it will probably get girls to start talking to me, finally.
Nice. I'm excited to see what happens in Season 2, and if there's any furthering of the plots.
There definitely will
be. Oh, yeah,
I'm going
worry.
To assume there won't.
What's a plot?
What's a plot?
Oh, boy.
What's a plot. Podcast?
Good night, everybody!
Jesus.
Thanks everyone for listening. Please like and subscribe to us on your favorite podcatcher app. Join the discussion over on our Discord or Facebook fan club, and please support us on our Patreon.
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Franca Blowey. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.